From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, you're listening to the Best of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The mission of the Christian Research Institute is to equip believers to always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have with gentleness and respect. For more information, resources, or to donate to CRI, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. And now, here's Bible Answer Man host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Again, the number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. Our contact information, as always, on the web, equip.org, via the mail, box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And our resource consultants are standing by, 888-7000. And the letter CRI, the book available to those who support the ministry all this month, 10 books that screwed up the world and 5 others that didn't help, by Benjamin Weicker. I thought that I would focus on another one of these books in today's monologue. That book is the book titled The Descent of Man by Charles Darwin. Reading this book will force us to come to grips with a very unpleasant reality. And that reality is that if everything Darwin wrote in a book that we think of as his magnum opus, then it logically follows that civilized people must make certain that the fit breed with abandon and the unfit do not indefinitely survive. And while that may sound immoral to some, we ought to remember that Darwin believed that morality was neither natural nor God-given, but rather, he believed that morality is the offshoot of nothing other than natural selection, or the origin of species by means of natural selection, or the preservation of favored races in the struggle for life. Let me put this another way. Evolution is driven by competition, and competition inevitably brings extinction. And therefore, writes Darwin in Descent, at some future period, not very distant as measured by centuries, the civilized races of man will exterminate and replace the savage races. Now, some, like Dawkins, have tried to absolve Darwin from racism. But Darwin cannot be absolved, nor can those who are his devotees. He was very, very clear about this. He has the Caucasian race on top, and then on the bottom, dangling at the edge of humanity, not my words, but his, the Negro or Australian, who are an evolutionary hair's breadth away from the gorilla. So what do you do to help evolution along? Well, remember the science of eugenics? It was applied effectively by the Nazis. But it wasn't just the Nazis. We like to talk about the Nazis. But what about American educators? Take, for example, George William Hunter. Does that ring a bell? He had a famous textbook. That textbook, A Civic Biology. It was a high school biology text that overtly points to the improvement of man. And the premise is that if the stock, and this is what was taught to kids back then, if the stock of domesticated animals can be improved, it is not unfair to ask if the health and vigor of future generations of men and women might not also be improved by applying the laws of selection. The unfit in this paradigm should not be helped. They ought to be terminated. Now, again, this is not some fringe individual. This is Charles Darwin in Dissent. And I would add another word before I go on. This is why books ought not to be burned. They ought to be read. Because if you read what Charles Darwin actually said, as opposed to the glossy sort of idealized picture of Darwin, you would be appalled. The unfit should not be helped. They should be exterminated. Why? Because those who are not well-born, the famous quote that Darwin liked to use, that moniker, those who are not well-born, well, they take from society and they give nothing in return. And as Hunter points out in this high school text, they are parasites. So if you're not well-born, you're a parasite. The remedy, says Hunter, would be to kill them off. He goes on to point out in his text that while society at present will not allow this, we do not have the remedy in terms of killing, but we do have the remedy in terms of separating such dregs of society. We can put them in asylums or other places, and therefore doing that will prevent such low and degenerate people from propagating. Remedies of this sort have been tried successfully, says George William Hunter in his biology text for high schoolers. Remedies of this sort have been tried successfully in Europe and are now meeting with success in this country. Now, some of you may not know who I'm talking about here. But if you've ever watched this classic film, Inherit the Wind, you were actually watching something that had to do with Hunter's book. Because that book was made famous by the Scopes trial of 1925. In fact, as Benjamin Weicker points out, and he points this out in the book that we're making available for those who support the ministry, 10 books that screwed up the world. As he points out, quote, it was the pro-evolution textbook that the forces of progress, led by lawyer Clarence Darrow, defended. In other words, he was defending this book against the class of stupid people. Stupid people included Christian William Jennings Bryan. Now, one wonders why that tidbit didn't make it into this propaganda piece. I mean, it was, I don't know how else to put it. It's cinematic, it was propaganda. Instead, the evolutionary eugenics paradigm is touted as benevolent. Evolutionary eugenics is benevolently intellectual, and Christians are, in Inherit the Wind, portrayed as bigoted ignoramuses. Well, all of that from The Descent of Man, I think we ought to come to grips in an age of scientific enlightenment with the applied science of eugenics. We're still paying reparations for this in polite society. North Carolina, if you're a taxpayer, you're paying for it. It's true in other states around the country. But this was enlightened. And remember, Inherit the Wind is still a classic that you can rent and you can watch. And you have a spin placed on reality. And evolution, I mean, if you believe in that, you're enlightened, you're free, you are a modern person. But if you are a Christian, oh my goodness, you are the dregs of society. Not particularly well-born, I guess. And so it's good for us to know what really goes on in these books. And some of us simply don't have the attention span to read all of these books. Some of us do. If you don't have the attention span to read all of these books, that probably be good for us to be familiar with. We'll get, again, 10 books that screwed up the world and 5 others that didn't help. I mean, this eugenics pandemonium is still going on in our culture today. But there are slightly tweaked ways in which eugenics is being communicated. Now it's no longer the Negro that is on the bottom, which was an outrage, as though somehow or other they were inferior people, along with the Australian. And the whites were on top. Well, now that's kind of being flipped. I was reading a piece in, let me see if I can bring this up, a piece, it was titled The College Fix. And the title was White Sociology Professor Says It's Racist for Whites to Have Mixed Race Children. But that was just the headline. This professor, Jessie Daniels, her specialty at the university, the City University of New York, Hunter College, her specialty was race, racism, and technology. And as, well, an enlightened intellectual, she says, whites must forgo reproducing. The white nuclear family is one of the most powerful forces supporting white supremacy. Whites must not reproduce, must not own homes. Once you buy into ideologies, you can start applying them to whoever you don't like at whatever juncture we are in history, because truth is no longer determined by some objective standard which says that we're created in the image of God and therefore we cannot look at another person because of their pigmentation or because of their status, whether we think they're, well, inferior, undesirable people. We cannot look at them as anything other than people made in the image and likeness of God, and to do that is an affront to God himself. But we don't anymore set our standard by the North Star. We set our standards by shooting stars, meaning whatever happens to be most popular. What determines truth now is the size and the scope of the latest lobby group. Pretty interesting, Christina, when you read this kind of stuff.
Yeah, yes. And what particularly struck me about this article is just the title, because we have so many kids that are mixed race even now. We have kids that, I mean, my adopted brother Xander, half Filipino, half white. Looking at this narrative, for him, it would be really difficult for him to swallow that his parents would be seen that way. And I think, I mean, my best friend and I have always talked about this, and she's Indian American. And our relationship has been one of being like, hey, what about this and what about this? And we come sometimes from different perspectives, and we see each other's perspective, and we call out the BS all the time, and that constantly has us reform our view on what we're thinking about race and the issues today. And I think that getting to know people that are different from you and getting to know their perspective is the way to combat things like white supremacy, not getting rid of white people.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. Again, it's a function of racism. It doesn't matter who the racism is against, it's a function of racism. And you even see this in Black Lives Matter. And I hardly dare say this anymore because of the outrage that always follows me saying anything about that group. But yet, if you go to their website and you look at their core values, what do you find? The disruption of the nuclear family. This is an outrage in and of itself. And how anyone can support that is simply beyond me. Now we have to redefine family, and we also have to start class warfare. Again, an outrage. We're going to your calls. I mean, the calls do not have to be on this subject. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK. We'll take your call right after the break. 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. And the book, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World, what I just communicated from that book, in essence, you can get that book as well at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271, or talk to our resource consultants, 888-7000, and the letter CRI. It's time that we got away from our smartphones and video games and started knowing what's going on in our culture, because those who do not know history are resigned to repeat history. And we are close to the edge, quite frankly. Appreciate those who stand with me prayerfully and financially, making a difference for time and for eternity, standing shoulder to shoulder with me in the battle for life and truth. We'll be right back.
If you've ever heard of a great books collection, well, here are their evil opposites. Machiavelli, Marx, Lenin, and Hitler are just a few of the authors whose writings have bled into the history books with their bloody conquests backed by disastrous ideas. But history is written every day, and these ideas are still influencing the world in which we live. As Christians, being familiar with these ideas and their influence in our world will allow us to better counter them with the call of Christ. That's why Dr. Benjamin Weicker wrote 10 Books That Screwed Up the World and 5 Others That Didn't Help. To receive your copy of 10 Books That Screwed Up the World as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's many outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. We'll be back in just a moment with more from Hank Hanegraaff. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. For many Christians, the reality of God is so obvious and undeniable that we're amazed anyone could seriously doubt it. And yet, many do. How can we help such people recognize what seems to be so apparent to us? James N. Anderson highlights 6 aspects of everyone's life that can be explained only if God exists. Other topics include, was there a Jewish temple in ancient Jerusalem? The irony of 13 reasons why, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is Christ the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Luke chapter 2, verses 10 through 12. While many of you will soon enter the hustle and bustle of the holiday season, Hank Hanegraaff has penned The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season to ensure that just as you prepare your home for Christmas, you likewise prepare your heart. Order The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season, by calling 888-7000-274 or by going online to www.equip.org. Also available is The Heart of Christmas audiobook, dramatically read by Hank Hanegraaff. The history of Islam is one of wanton carnage and horrific oppression, and it has been whitewashed beyond recognition by our politically correct elites. According to credible sources, 120 million Africans, 80 million Hindus, 60 million Christians, 10 million Buddhists have been slaughtered in the name of Islam. And that doesn't include the millions of Muslims killed by other Muslims. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read Hank Hanegraaff's stunning book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. www.cri.org. Darwin, Freud, Sanger, Rousseau, and Marx. These are just a few of the infamous individuals who wrote books with ideas that have screwed up the world we live in. Ideas have consequences. Being a persuasive Christian witness involves familiarity with the ideas of secularist, materialist, and atheist. And Dr. Benjamin Weicker has read the worst books in Christian civilization, so you don't have to. This month, we are offering 10 books that screwed up the world and 5 others that didn't help by Benjamin Weicker. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Let's return to your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. The number to dial, 888-ASK-HANK. Back to the phone lines. We'll talk next to Jenny, listening in El Paso, Texas, KLP. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Hank. And God bless you, and keep getting better.
Thank you.
I have a question. I'm driving, so I'll ask my question, and then I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Okay.
I'm looking for a church locally. The church I used to go to is no longer available. And I don't know if you know who Charles Nieman is or not, but he has one of those a prosperity-type churches, and he's opened one up near my house. And it bothers me because it's called Abundant Living, and we need to, he says, so we can live life according to Jesus and live the abundant life that he planned for us. My question is, I've never heard that. I may be wrong. All I've always heard is, like Jesus told his disciples, they beat me, they did this to me, they persecuted me, you're going to get persecuted. So I'm just really torn between this church and the abundant living and what I've heard in the Bible. And I may be wrong, 100% wrong.
Well, actually, you're 100% right. In fact, I just did a podcast with a friend of mine named Father Themi. He's in Australia right at the moment, but he works amongst the poorest people in the world in Sierra Leone, West Africa. And we're talking about this very thing because the largest crowds in Africa come from the poorest and the most downtrodden of all people. How do they get these big crowds? Well, they promise the crowds that if they come, they will experience the abundant life. They'll experience prosperity. If they're sick, they'll have a cure. If they need a spouse, they'll find a spouse. So they're promised all kinds of things. That, of course, attracts the poorest of the poor. And in the end, what you win someone by is what you win them to. This being a classic example. If you win them by the prosperity gospel, then you win them to a false gospel, because then Christ becomes a mere means to your ends as opposed to being the end. Then people are invited to the master's table not because they love the master, but rather because they love what is on the master's table. I love, Christina, what James says. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of all kinds of different kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance, and perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So ultimately, we can take great joy in persecution. We can take great joy in suffering because it produces perseverance. And boy, can I attest to that.
Yes, and that doesn't mean that pain should happen, but rather that in a Christian worldview, we have hope. We have the light that even though that pain happens, even though that suffering happens, there is something greater that we can look to. And that's fundamentally different than other religions. It's not that we're saying that people should stay poor, that, you know, that it's okay because it teaches us, but rather that God can use people in any situation. I think that's why in the house codes, Paul, the house codes that Paul writes about, the house slave codes, that it's not like you have to not be a slave in order to be considered one of God's children. You can be one of God's children in the midst of slavery.
Yeah, because ultimately, if you understand who you are in light of Christ, you recognize that you are created with the Imago Dei, the stamp of God upon you that creates the knowledge within you that you are of incalculable value and worth. I love what Peter says too, you know, and so often we quote 1 Peter 3:15, but there's a context to that where Peter says, who is going to harm you if you're eager to do good? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you're blessed. Do not fear what they fear. Do not be frightened. And then what is familiar to us, but in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and with respect. But he's not done. I mean, the language goes on. You know, there's actually a comma, not a period, after respect. Paul goes on to say, Peter, although Paul says the same thing in Colossians, or essentially the same thing. He says, keeping a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander. So in this world, you're going to have trouble. Take heart. He's overcome the world. Jesus said, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. He goes on to say, blessed are those when people insult you, persecute you, falsely say all kinds of evil against you on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So it's not really your condition in this earth that ultimately matters. It is what we will experience for all eternity. And in the meantime, we can enjoy whatever we go through, knowing that nothing comes to us before it first passes through the filter of God's love. Let's go back to the phone lines, talk to Elaine in Houston, Texas, listening on the web. Hi, Elaine.
Hello, Hank. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Well, I have listened on and off for a while and have been wanting to ask you this question for quite some time. So I would like to know how you handle thoughts that are just too big to grasp, like specifically like the concept of eternity. You know, how do you, you're knowledgeable, you're wise, you know, how do you handle things that are just too big for our minds?
Well, the first thing is you realize just how small you are and how small your mind is. I mean, it's sort of in some ways analogous to trying to explain Einstein to a small neck clam. I'm that small neck clam by comparison to God. And so his ways are above my ways. His thoughts are above my thoughts. He's unfathomable. And if you ever reduce God or the kingdom to come to something that is completely explicable, you have now diminished the promise of what is to come, and you have diminished the promiser, who is God himself. So we have to ultimately say that God is beyond our ken. You remember the famous passage in Job. You know, you have 40 chapters, and then Job wants to ask a question. And this is the most righteous man on the planet. He's really been through it. His wife has actually said, curse God and die. He's got friends that are giving him counsel, but really not counsel. They're excoriating him. And Job at the end is considered to be righteous in all of his ways, except he wants to know why. Why is this happening to him? And God as it were, answers through the thunderstorm and says to Job, look, Job, you can't even understand how I create a tiny drop of dew. How are you going to understand what is happening in the heavenlies? And this is when Job repents in sackcloth and ashes. He's already going through misery, a misery that will be changed in the future, as we see as we continue on in the book of Job. But now he reduces himself humbly before the Lord, because he now understands he's asking questions that he has no right to ask, because his mind is too small to understand the unfathomable God that he serves and that he loves. And we're in the same situation. You know, I was diagnosed with mantle cell lymphoma April 15th. And I mean, the natural question would be, why, Lord, at the peak of my strength, with the greatest opportunities to impact people around the world, why would you allow me to, you know, have this incurable disease? I mean, I can go into remission, but it ultimately is not curable. Why would that happen? Well, that's not the question to ask. The real issue is, can I trust God in the midst of my wise? And the answer is a resounding yes. And why is that? Well, that is because I have seen God be faithful over and over and over and over again. And if he has been faithful, then I know I can trust him. So I don't ask the why question. I trust him in the midst of my whys and know that whatever he has planned for me is better than I could plan for myself. And I'm satisfied in that.
Well, thank you. That is very helpful. I appreciate your perspective on it.
Elaine, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate hearing from you and from everyone that gives us a call. You know, it's so fantastic when people ask questions like this, because it gives us an opportunity not only to speak to the caller, but gives us an opportunity to speak to people in places that we will never be. I mean, I've got calls from places I have never been, New Zealand, Australia, all over the world. I have been to many places, but there are many places I haven't been, and yet I'm able to connect with people there, and that is the blessing that we have as a result of people standing shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth.
That's a beautiful thing, and the fact that our ministry is global, and I actually connected with you, Elaine, on a different level, because I've actually dealt with what I call existential fear. I remember when I was 7 years old, I was crying on the stairs because I could not grasp the concept of eternity. And it's something that when I'm scared about it, I pray and I rely on the faithfulness of God. I rely on my relationships that I know to be true. I talk to my mom. And I rely on the hope of God that's always here for us and the promise that he brings that even though I can't understand these concepts, I know God is good.
That is beautifully said. We are coming to station break. We'll be back on the other side of the break. Do remember, when you support the ministry this month, the book, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World by Benjamin Weicker, available to you. Check it out on the web at equip.org or simply write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. Our resource consultants also standing by, 888-7000. And the letter C, or I'll be back in just a bit with the quote of the day and more answers to your questions right here on the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
In order to find out where we're going, we need to know where we've been. Likewise, in order to understand how to improve the world around us, we need to examine where we've screwed up. Benjamin Weicker's book, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World and 5 Others That Didn't Help, offers a witty examination of ideas that have impacted our world for the worst, so that we can learn from their mistakes and better the world we've been blessed with. Read 10 Books That Screwed Up the World by Benjamin Weicker. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back with more answers from the Bible Answer Man.
So rapid and pandemic has been the decline of biblical literacy and spiritual discernment that our once unimaginable post-truth culture is effectively becoming an anti-truth culture. While the sun is setting on the Western Church, Islam is now the fastest growing religion in the world. This means that it's not simply enough to be aware of this threat. Christians need to wake up, stand up, and speak up. This means being able to counter the outright lies about Islam that otherwise will go unchecked with horrendous consequences. And that's what Hank Hanegraaff's book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion, will enable you to do. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI. Make a gift to support CRI's many outreaches, 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org.
To fully grasp the significance of Christ's messianic role, you must drink deeply from the wellspring of Old Testament prophecy. In Hebrews, as in the rest of the New Testament, the Old Testament history of Israel is interpreted as a succession of types that find ultimate fulfillment in the birth, death, resurrection, and ascension of the Christ we celebrate at Christmas.
Hank Hanegraaff has penned The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season to ensure that just as you prepare your home for Christmas, you likewise prepare your heart. Order The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season by calling 888-7000-274 or by going online to www.equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Hank Hanegraaff explains that while politically correct culture is quick to point out discrimination and abuse of women in other respects, there has been a deafening silence when it comes to the systematic oppression of women under Islamic Sharia law. Other topics include God made us so that He could be our Father in a way that reflects His fatherly relationship to His only Son, the rational inescapability of God. Was there a Jewish temple in ancient Jerusalem? And much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Here's a question. Why are rivers polluted downstream? Because of contaminants upstream. Bad ideas have consequences, and just as toxins in our water can cause disease and even death, toxic ideas can cause millions of deaths over centuries. Benjamin Weicker brilliantly distills some of history's most dangerous ideas in 10 books that screwed up the world and 5 others that didn't help. To receive your copy of 10 Books That Screwed Up the World as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. And now, let's rejoin your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thanks so much, Randy. The quote of the day comes from Benjamin Weicker, author of 10 books that screwed up the world and 5 others that didn't help. The book available for those who support the ministry. Check it out on the web at equip.org. The quote of the day as follows: Hitler's extermination of the unfit was not just limited to the Jews. The slaughter of Jews was only one aspect of his overall eugenic vision. While we shun racial extermination of unfit children and adults in gas chambers, we have very little anxiety about eliminating the same kind of less than perfect human beings in abortion clinics. A sober, somber quote that will be up on the web at equip.org. Again, you'll find this quote in Benjamin Weicker's book, 10 books that screwed up the world and five others that didn't help. And, you know, I thought when I was reading Benjamin Weicker in this regard about what Adolf Hitler said himself, you know, he was into exterminating the unfit. And he thought that the Jews were unfit. And oftentimes we think that that was the sole atrocity. It was an unthinkable atrocity. But also remember, Adolf Hitler said famously, "I have given orders to my death units to exterminate without mercy or pity men, women, and children belonging to the Polish-speaking race." After all, who remembers the extermination of the Armenians? So Hitler was well aware of how we can quickly forget atrocities. He was only one world war removed from what had happened in the First World War, where the Ottoman Turks, where they slaughtered and sought to wipe out a whole race, as it were, using their terminology, a whole people group, sought to wipe out a people group. I mean, think about that. And then he had the temerity to say, "I can do this and get away with it because people have regrettable amnesia when it comes to the great events of world history." Again, the quote of the day will be on the web at equip.org. Something to ponder. Let's go back to the phone lines. Talk to Daniel listening in Lexington, Kentucky, Sirius XM 131. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Hank. I was wondering if you could kind of compare, contrast the Eastern Orthodox with the Anglican Church. I've kind of, the Eucharist has caught my attention and listening to you over the last month or so. I'm trying to go on a journey, but I don't know exactly which direction at this point.
Yeah, well, you know, there are significant differences at the very beginning. At the outset, I would point out the difference between the Western Church and the Eastern Church. That is significant on many levels. But I'd also say that it's important to realize that Eastern Orthodoxy or the Eastern Church is not innovative. It perpetuates to the best of its ability what has gone on before. This is not what you would find in Anglicanism, which is an offshoot of the Western Roman Catholic Church. There you see a lot of innovation, and you need to be very, very careful about that. The innovation must always be checked out in light of Scripture. So within the Anglican Church, and again, I have to be careful about this because I don't want to paint with a broad brush. There are differences within Anglicanism, and so to paint with a broad brush is not fair. But you look at the liberal wing of Anglicanism, and you'll find all kinds of innovations that are unthinkable from a biblical perspective. Now, to what you actually commented on in the prologue to your question, both Anglicanism and Eastern Orthodoxy embrace the mystery of the Eucharist and hold to the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and do not try to explain it. So in that sense, there's some commonality, which you point to and I think point to correctly.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for your call. Again, it's instructive to note that for 1,000 years of church history, this was a time when the body of Christ was yet undivided. Believers humbly took the Lord at his word. So what did the Lord say? He said, "This is my body. This is my blood." How this could be so, well, nobody could tell. The church simply confessed the real presence of Jesus Christ to be a great and glorious mystery. And I should add that even after the great schism, which took place in 1054, even after when the Eastern and Western churches were divided at the table, the Eucharist was still unanimously believed to be the real presence of Christ. And that was likewise, as I think I said in this broadcast, but I've certainly said in other broadcasts, that was a conviction of Martin Luther. He was at the center of a great schism as well, the second great schism, a schism that fissured the Western half of the church. But nonetheless, he remained unified with the ancient church respecting the matter of the real presence. And again, the incomprehensibility of Christ's real presence is of little consequence. This is likened to the enigma that we find in incarnation. We can't explain how Christ can be one person with two natures. We can't explain the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. Experiencing the real presence of Christ, however, is tantamount to becoming one with Christ, and oneness with Christ is tantamount to oneness with the Father and the Spirit. Much more could be said about this, but a very important question, very important subject, and one that I will elaborate on in future editions of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, as well as in my writings, because I ultimately believe that the Eucharist and the real presence of Christ is a pearl of greatest price, a pearl that I am willing to sacrifice all for, because that pearl of great price has a value that cannot be measured in mere earthly terms. Brenda has a Facebook question I want to address today. I think it's a very important question. I read it as I came into the studio. And here's what Brenda asked. She says, is there a record of the New Testament talking about Jesus offering sacrifices? Since his enemies did not believe that he was without sin, is there any record of them pointing out that he never offered sacrifices? How can we be sure Christ was sinless? Well, let me take the last part of that question first by saying the Bible unequivocally teaches that Jesus was sinless, that Jesus was holy. Paul says Jesus had no sin. John said, in him is no sin. Peter said Jesus committed no sin, no deceit was found in his mouth. Paul in Hebrews says, we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are. And then he adds the words, yet without sin. Jesus himself, and this is important probably to focus in on for a long time, although we don't have a long time, but Jesus himself went so far as to challenge antagonists asking, can any of you prove me guilty of sin? Well, the answer to the rhetorical question is no. For Jesus said, the one who sent me is with me. He has not left me alone, for I always, 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 always do what pleases him. And even the unbelievers and the demons acknowledge that Jesus was innocent, that he was righteous, that he was holy. Judas Iscariot, even the one portrayed by Jesus as a devil, said that he had betrayed innocent blood. Pilate, the secular authority, found no fault in him. Demons declared that Jesus is the Holy One. And the centurion, remember him at the foot of the cross? He said that Jesus was a righteous man. The thief saying Jesus was innocent. With respect to the other part of the question, Brenda, there is no instance in the whole of Scripture of Jesus offering a sacrifice for sin. Instead, he offered himself for the sins of the world. He was sinless, and the Father affirmed his sinlessness, that he was indeed a lamb without blemish or defect. And you see this actually at the Father's words during Christ's baptism. Remember the voice? The voice came from heaven and said, This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. And ultimately, in the Father raising Christ from the dead, we see the ultimate vindication to the claims of Jesus Christ. None other than God has the power to lay down his life and take it up again. Jesus Christ is the sinless sacrifice. Jesus Christ is the only one through whom we might be reconciled to God, not only in time, but also for eternity. This is the horror of Islam. Islam is willing to rip the heart out of the Christian faith, to say that Jesus Christ did not sacrifice himself, that Jesus Christ did not, was not crucified, that Jesus Christ was not resurrected. And the truth, of course, ultimately comes, in my mind, through the validity of the Bible. We can demonstrate it to be a reliable authority. Much could be said about that. I did write about this in Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. We're at the end of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your support. Thank you for standing shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth. You can give in a safe, secure fashion on the web at equip.org. So long for now. See you next week.
Thank you for joining us for the Bible Answer Man broadcast. If you'd like more information about the Christian Research Institute or to order resources, just call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-274. Or visit equip.org, where you can listen live or download archived broadcasts. Again, that's equip.org. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is supported solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. The history of Islam is one of wanton carnage and horrific oppression, and it has been whitewashed beyond recognition by our politically correct elites. According to credible sources, 120 million Africans, 80 million Hindus, 60 million Christians, 10 million Buddhists have been slaughtered in the name of Islam. And that doesn't include the millions of Muslims killed by other Muslims. Islam is the only significant religious system in the history of the human race with a socio-political structure of laws that mandate violence against the infidel. Read Hank Hanegraaff's stunning book, Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. Receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership when you call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Today, in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is Christ the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Luke chapter 2, verses 10 through 12. While many of you will soon enter the hustle and bustle of the holiday season, Hank Hanegraaff has penned The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season to ensure that just as you prepare your home for Christmas, you likewise prepare your heart. Order The Heart of Christmas, a devotional for the season by calling 888-7000-274 or by going online to www.equip.org. Also available is The Heart of Christmas audiobook, dramatically read by Hank Hanegraaff.